Hello and welcome to episode 37 of Track. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This week on Track, we have a roundup of the latest news and results from around the running world, including the London Marathon, Great Manchester Run and Berlin Marathon. We also look forward to this weekend's Boston and Chicago Marathons, and we have an interview at the end of the show with Scottish 1500 metre runner Erin Wallace, who's had a great season, which included medals at the British Champs and Euro Under-23s. As always, I'm joined by Kat Hutchison and George Beardmore. How are we doing, guys?
Yeah, good, thank you. Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay, thanks, George. Been a few weeks since we've spoken, actually, which is mostly my fault. But George, you're back in Loughborough now, training with the Fast Boys, had a couple of races or a race at the road relays. And you're still training for the Great South Run coming up, the 10 miler. So bring us up to speed with what you've been up to and the highlights.
So when was the road relays? 10 days ago ish now, nearly 2 weeks. So yeah, they were pretty good. I think I ran like 40 seconds quicker than I did in 2019 is when we were the last on it. Yeah. So I think I ran about 40 seconds quicker than that. Which, yeah, I was pleased with. I think I was ninth fastest overall on the day, which again was, yeah, good. Yeah, good result and good way to start the season, as I'd only done probably 3-ish weeks of kind of proper training after a break at the end of track season. So, yeah, to already be running as well as I was really pleased with. And then, yeah, been really good since then. I think I came to Loughborough like the next day or a couple of days after and have been training here since then, a couple of group sessions, just been out for a tempo run this evening. So yeah, all good.
Yeah, so ninth overall fastest leg at the Midland Road Relays. That's got to be top 10, must be a pretty good. I'm sure you want to go faster in the future, but that must be a nice little sort of yardstick for you.
Yeah, definitely. And I ran, I think the official time was like maybe 17:58 or 59, I think. So the aim was to go under 18 minutes. I think I'd run 18:37 2 years ago. So yeah, I wanted to go under 18 minutes. So I did that as well, which was good. So yeah, just a good day out. Good to be back at the road relays. It was a while since we'd last done it. And you had a good run too, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, so I was going to say to you, actually, I was first leg and then I passed over to you. Do you think you could have eked out a few seconds being amongst the chaos and the crowds in leg one?
Yeah, maybe. I think... was the first leg one in 17:50-ish, I think.
Okay.
Which I think I maybe could have been up there with the leaders on the first leg. And that was, yeah, I think it was, yeah, 17:50. I'm just looking at the results. So, yeah, maybe I could have either been right up there or maybe even led the first leg. But, yeah, I've never liked the first leg of the relay. It's just the downhill start, narrow. I think Dave Waldron, our manager, was happy for you to take that rather than me get pushed over or tripped over. Maybe a few seconds. I ran certainly the first half too hard, chasing down all the people that I could see in front of me. And then as soon as I'd gone past them and had no one really left to chase, I was just hanging on and it started to hurt quite a bit. So probably not, didn't run it the most sensible way either, but even so, it's still a good run out.
Yeah. Top three, Omar Ahmed, which is probably no surprise, 16:50. And then we had Tom Mortimer, who we've spoken to for Stroud on this podcast before. Now a New Balance athlete, actually, which I'd mentioned, which is good for Tom. And then Will Richardson in third. So yeah, really great run. Kat, big fan of the road relays you are, aren't you?
Yeah, my favourite race. I came up to watch the ladies team and watch you lot. It was, good. Really, really fun to watch. I saw Tom Mortimer was on the second leg and he didn't come through for ages. So his first runner must have been a little bit slower. But he had a massive group of girls from Stroud all cheering, "Go Tom, go Tom." It was really sweet seeing like him inspiring the next generation of runners. They were going mad. And he actually ran really fast. He was way down the field, but he actually ran like 17:02 or something. He was,
yeah. I've got a feeling he went past like people. I think he went past like 50 odd people, which is pretty ridiculous. I don't know why he wasn't on first leg, because he would have won it quite comfortably. Maybe that was the thinking. I wanted him to actually have people to chase rather than just running off into the distance on his own. But yeah, very fast time.
Very cool.
Yeah, and I was so jealous watching everybody.
Yeah,
I really want to be racing.
You'll be back.
Yeah.
Actually, just on the road relays, we probably don't have a huge amount to say on it, but I think it's worth a mention. Last time we recorded, we sort of had just seen the news that the Southern relays had been cancelled because they said the Crystal Palace ground wasn't up to it and gave some other reasons. But what we should say, just after we recorded that week, so Saw, the running apparel company, and some individuals, including Mike Boucher, who we've interviewed before from Aldershot Farnham and District, actually put on an event as the Southern Relays that took place in Milton Keynes. And by all accounts, it was a great success. So well done to those guys for actually putting on an event last minute. And by the sound of it, it was as good as anything. Yeah.
Do you know whether they'll get to qualify for the Nationals based on that? Because they've got to pick someone to go to the Nationals, haven't they?
Yeah, so I bumped into Mike at the marathon again, and he said that there were some automatic places given for the Southern teams into the Nationals based on the last 2 years of performances.
Okay.
And there were some places up for grabs where they were competing in Milton Keynes, the one that they put on. So, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
It was a mixture. Yeah. So well done to those guys, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in years to come as to how that's going to be organized. But that was, I think that's an important shout out there. George, then just before we move on to Kat, obviously Great South's run, 10-mile race you've got in the diary. How long are we away from that now? And yeah, how's it looking?
So 10 days, I think, 17th of October, week on Sunday. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. Yeah, like I say, I think initially I thought whatever I could run for 10 miles now in October would be a good aim for to run the same pace for a half marathon in March, April-ish time, end of the cross-country season. So I think that was the thinking. I think I can probably run close to 5-minute miling. I'm not going to quite say under. I'm certainly going to go off at low 5-minute miling, probably between, around 5:05, and then see if I can pick it up from there. I spoke to Frank about it yesterday, and we don't want me to, just completely blow up and end up running like 5:30s in the last few miles just because I've gone out far too hard. So it's the longest race I've ever done. So I think the plan is to be sensible. Doesn't mean I will be, because I was supposed to be sensible in Tuesday's session. I wasn't. We'll see. But that's the plan.
Very good. So we're hoping for I'll say it if you don't want to say it, a 49:59.
That would be perfect. But yeah. I mean, I think from what I've heard about the course or from what I've seen, it's flat. But if it's windy, it's not going to be fast. So depending on the weather, I'll probably have to readjust my aim. I think if it's really windy, then 51 would be a really good time.
Yeah.
Maybe depending on how windy it is, maybe even not that quick. But good conditions, certainly low 50s, and 49:59 would be a bonus, but probably a bit of a long shot for this stage in the season.
Sure, absolutely. Don't be an idiot, Kat would say.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Well, we'll look forward to hearing about that next time, hopefully. And we'll be crossing our fingers for the weather forecast, which would be great. Any coverage of it, do you know? It's often on a red button or something, isn't it? I don't know if that's been announced yet.
Yeah, I presume it will be on the BBC. It normally is, and the Great Manchester Run and Great North Run both were, so I can't see why it wouldn't be. Hopefully.
And any noises about start lists? I might have a type now and see if I can see anyone, but have you heard anything?
No, I know. Well, I know Frank's doing it as well. I know, because I was thinking or hoping that Mark Scott would be there, not that I'd be anywhere near him, obviously, but just like a big name to be on the start line with. But I think he's, because he did all the other great run series, so I thought he might do it, but I'm pretty sure he said he's done for the season now, or that's him done on the road. So yeah, not sure actually. Maybe McColgan, she seems to be doing a lot of that kind of thing. I haven't seen any official though, so I'll keep my eyes up.
Yeah, I can't see anything official on the website just yet. And would Frank be what, similar to you, ahead of you, behind you, someone you could work with? On you're not really.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I think because he obviously did the marathon in February, and then I think injury and illness held him back a bit. So normally he'd be miles ahead of me. He's run 63 something for the half, which would be 48 something through 10 miles, I'd have thought. So I don't think he's entirely sure, but I'm sure he'll be running pretty quickly, because he always seems to be. His sessions on Strava have been pretty good of late, so I'm sure he'll be in good shape.
Cool, sounds good. We look forward to hearing about that. Kat, how are you? How's your running going?
Yep, going much better now. The CBD is working, so I've managed to build up. I ran 8 miles on Sunday, so that was the longest I've done since June, and absolutely no flare up from the knee. And I did just over 30 miles last week, and hoping to keep going with that. I've entered Manchester now for April next year, so entered that, booked the hotel, all in for that now. So I've got Telford booked for December, but I'm thinking that's getting a little close now when I'm only running 30 miles a week. But and the knee is definitely still there, even though I'm running. It's a lot better, but it's not. I can't start doing sessions or anything yet. So just getting some miles in. But just great to be back to building up, and obviously having that target of Manchester in April.
Should be
good. So
very good. It's early April, isn't it, Manchester? I think it's the 3rd or something.
The 3rd. So I've got a couple of friends that have signed up too, so it should be fun getting the training in for that.
That'd be good. So it's training over the winter for a spring marathon.
I like that.
Okay.
Not a fan of winter training. Well, I like winter. I like the mileage of winter training compared to track season, but I hate double days when it's dark both runs.
Yeah. Speaking of winter mileage, cross country season, George and Kat, both something you're going to be getting involved with, do you think?
Yeah, I'll be doing all the Birmingham leagues before Christmas with some road races in there as well, Telford 10K. And then after Christmas, I'll do the counties, Midlands, Nationals, inter-counties, all that. So yeah, definitely
sounds good.
Definitely heading to the cross countries. I'll probably have to hobble around the first one a bit, but hoping we really want to get promoted. We've never fielded a team, or very rarely get four runners out, but we've got a stronger team now, so we're hoping to finally, we're right down as far as you can go, so shouldn't be too difficult to start getting back up.
There's no
we just need to actually get all our runners to turn up this time.
Perfect, sounds good. But we enjoy some cross country coming up in the next few months. Good. Okay, so I suppose there's only one place to start for this week's roundup, and that's London Marathon. Before we get into the proper runners, I'll sort of give you a quick overview of what happened with me. So first of all, to get the positive stuff out the way, I'm sure you guys watched on TV, it was just amazing and great to be back, like in a big city London Marathon. The crowds were out in force as they normally are in London. The atmosphere was brilliant. And just the whole thing of traveling down a couple of days before, going to the expo, all the excitement that brings, and then the morning of traveling over to the race, it was just great. And so that part of it was excellent. Like going over Tower Bridge, I think that's probably the loudest I've heard it in the sort of 3 or 4 times I've run London. So from an atmosphere perspective, and I think it probably makes it that much nicer because there's been such a long break. So yeah, that was amazing, as it always is. It's my all-time favorite race. I love London. So yeah, it was brilliant to be there. And from that perspective, I sort of did just love that bit. Obviously though, currently, you know, I run and train to try and run certain times. And although I think I eked out 5 seconds worth of a PB on Sunday, it obviously wasn't the time that I've spoken about loads. Obviously, I always talk about this 2:30 barrier. And that didn't happen. So I ran a 2:34:20 something. So ultimately for me, like, it's disappointment again, which is fine, because I think I should be disappointed with that time based on sort of my training and other races. But yeah, without trying, you know, without boring people, yeah, it is disappointing. And I think the biggest thing is, as we know, the marathon is, it's difficult to jump back in straight away. So I think you're left to stew on it for a while, typically. I mean, so that's one thing. But it started off really well. I was running with Alistair McDonald, who's a rugby runner, also TMR. So me and him sort of ran for 17 miles together. And it was about 17, 18 miles, I sort of started to fall off the pace. But we went through half quite happily in 1:14:10, I think we went through, which was about what we wanted. And yeah, everything felt quite good and quite easy. Managed to get my gels down, managed to grab some drinks. And so it was all good. There was a bit of a group. I wouldn't say there was like a real working pack group, but there were people around. A bit of a wind here and there, but nothing, you wouldn't call it windy as such. It's probably windier than you would want it to be, but I don't think it really sort of made a huge difference. But then, yeah, 17, 18 miles, sort of similar story for me. For whatever reason, the pace just sort of a bit of a drop off, and then it was a bigger drop off, and then a bigger drop off. And yeah, my half splits don't look particularly good. So around a 1:14 first half and a 1 either 19 high or 20 low second half. So that's just not what you want, really. Not good enough to run the time I wanted to run. So ultimately disappointing, with the caveat of being my favorite event and loving parts of it as well. So can't wait till next year, really, basically.
Yeah. Do you look at your watch when you're running? Are you constantly looking at every mile split? And
yeah, I probably do look at it quite a lot. I mean, there are mile times at every mile in London, so there's a big clock at every mile anyway. I probably do look at my watch quite a lot.
Because I reckon in marathons, it's always that time around the 18 miles where you start, like, it starts to get hard to hold the pace. Mm. And I think if you're looking at your watch too much, you know too much about that.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to keep that positive attitude when you know you're falling off the pace. Whereas if you didn't know, you could keep it more positive and probably keep going better.
Yeah.
Then once you know, like, it, I mean, watching it on the tracker is like, it's painful enough watching everybody, like, everyone's on their target. Obviously the first 5K split, everyone's on or below their target, and you're thinking, oh, all good. And then at 18 to 20 miles, you just see everything start to fall to pieces for everybody. Like, it just starts to go down. And thinking about running Manchester, luckily I entered on Saturday rather than leaving it till Sunday, because after watching everybody slow down, I just thought, God, it's just so hard at that point. Like, but I think if you don't know that, or you don't have that real set goal in your head, you would still be positive. If your goal was 2:35, you would still have your head up and you'd be running.
I think definitely that when you have, I think the mistake I've made over the last few years and probably will continue to make is just have a time goal and no other goal.
Yeah.
So, which means if you're having a bad day or if the weather's bad or whatever, as soon as the time goal's gone, everything's gone, and I end up throwing the toys out the pram and then start sulking, and that's it. Whereas if you had a different mindset of whatever, running
trying to get to, I love the way you say, I make, and I'll probably continue to make. It's like we all know what we do wrong in running, but none of us are going to change.
Yeah.
But I do think, yeah, that for you, I think if you could try and not look at your watch, which I know is almost impossible, but and you'd probably just work it out from the clocks, but
I think I'd have to not wear a watch to not look at it.
Yeah,
that would be the case,
because I found that was the biggest thing with me in racing, was when I stopped looking at my watch, I started actually being able to keep going. When things got tough, I didn't care, because I just imagined my watch is telling me something great, even if it's not. And then I just, every time I hear it beep the mile, I think, yep, that's saying 6 minute mile in, keep going.
It is an interesting psychology, isn't it, about the information you get and how you decide.
Yeah, and just in a marathon, I think it's so important at that end bit to have a positive, like I was talking with John Potts about it at coffee on Wednesday, and just saying that by that last few miles, you just don't care anymore. Like, nobody cares about their time in the last few miles. They just want it to end. It's just, you're just trying to finish it.
Yeah.
But it's, I think if you had that positive attitude in that last few miles, that it was going to be a great time, even if it isn't, you'd run faster.
No, I think you're right. And listen, it is what it is. And I'll be doing one in spring, so.
Yeah,
possibly Manchester, I think.
Yeah, do Manchester.
So so it is what it is, and just need to do it now. I've said to a few people, I just need to stop talking about this and just do it. So
from now on, you'll get there.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think in hindsight, like 74 low through halfway was a bit quick, or
possibly? It's funny, I spoke to about two or three different people beforehand, and you get different sort of opinions. So I think one school of thought is you're going to slow down anyway, or most people, there is some sort of slowdown. So you might be better off going through slightly quicker.
Yeah.
And not bank some time in that regard. But, you know, there's going to be a slowing. So try and get on the sort of top end of what is sensible. And then other people say, oh, you're better off feeling completely comfortable until 18, 20 miles and then push on. And if that means a negative split, that's perfect. So possibly, it felt fine at the time. But maybe, adding another 20, 30 seconds onto that would have been sensible. I wouldn't want to go much slower, because then you sort of rely on negative splitting.
Yeah, I think that's the difficult thing.
Slower, you rely on a negative split, which is tough, isn't it, I guess?
Unless because I know, I'm pretty sure, Chris Thompson did that in the Olympic trials, and it clearly can work if you get it right.
Yeah.
I think that was what Frank's plan was when he raced in February, and someone I train with quite a lot, who Frank coaches as well, John Gordon, who is at Loughborough, he did Berlin, and that was his plan, didn't quite work out. To negative split. And it's something Frank's told me for like track 10K, if you're trying to run sub 30, go through halfway in 15:05, 15:10. And to me, that sounds horrible, because you're probably already hurting at that point. And you realize you've got to pick it up even more second half. But I think it can work if you get it. Obviously, it's easier for 10Ks, because I'd have run further than 10K in training like hundreds of times, whereas if you don't do that for marathons. So expecting to negative split marathons probably.
I certainly think it can work, and I think it probably would, that type of approach would probably suit me better than trying to bank time for whatever reason.
Yeah, you need to feel good at the end, I think, don't you? You need to get to one of those. But yeah. I mean, I think that was, it wasn't like you went out
it wasn't like
way too hard. That was a reasonable go, but maybe a go at negative splitting one, just to see if you can feel better at the end.
Well, hopefully I'll be running them for a while yet, so I can try both.
I think one without a watch.
I think it probably is more realistic for like elites to negative split, because I'm sure Kipchoge runs like 30 plus miles pretty regularly, whereas you wouldn't have run 26 miles at all, and you just can't really.
I was tracking a lot of people and nobody negative split it. It's just everybody's just slowing down, and I think it's, yeah, the more elite you get, the closer they get to at least even splitting it.
Yeah.
With, you know, maybe, yeah. I think
listening to Josh Lund review on Inside Jogging podcast, he had a nice way of putting it. I think he said it was a battle of attrition and he died the least or something, so because he finished strongly. I think
there were some people, weren't they, in the elites, like Josh Griffiths and people like that finished really strong.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's have a chat about those guys, the quick guys and girls from London. George, did you want to take us through either the men or women, whoever you think, or perhaps the British contenders, and a few post or past interviewees of us as well in there?
Yeah, I'll go with the men, just because I interviewed Phil Sussman a few weeks ago. So yeah, I think he was, well, certainly the biggest story from a British perspective. Got to see quite a lot of him as well, particularly in the second half of the race on the coverage, which was quite good, because quite often we seem to miss the British contenders because they're not up there at the front with the kind of East Africans. We don't see as much as of the British races we like, but we got to see quite a lot of Sussman. And yeah, so he ran 2:12:58. I think he was on like 2:11 pace for best part of 20 miles and then started to feel it a little bit. I think Jake Smith drops out around the 20 mile mark, maybe a bit before. He was pacemaking, and Sussman looked pretty good up until then, I thought, and I think maybe that's just his running style as well. You couldn't tell that he was kind of as hurting as much as it kind of turned out he was, but he still held it together to run a really good time, 2:12 on debut. I think that's European and Commonwealth standard for next year. Just missed the world standard, which is 2:11:30, but you might have a chance to give it another go between now and then, maybe, depending on. I mean, I imagine he'll be at one of the Europeans and Commonwealths for definite. So it's whether he wants to run another marathon in the spring to try and get the world standard and then run the worlds, or whether he's just happy focusing on one of the Europeans or Commonwealths if he can get a spot. So that was the main result from a British perspective. Josh Griffiths was about 40 seconds behind in the end, and he was someone that came through pretty strong, I think, in the late stages. So they were 7th and 8th overall. Matt Leach was 9th in 2:15:31, which was a PB for him, I think, by a couple of minutes. And then Andrew Davis was just outside his PB. I think he was 10th in 2:15. And then the top six, so it's Cissé Lema that won the men's race. And a bit of a surprise, really, because from the get-go, Katata was the favourite, and he was nowhere near the pace at all from the start. It was really weird. Like, I don't even really know why he finished. Maybe he gets more appearance fee if he finishes the race, or yeah, it just seemed a bit weird. He was clearly off his game. I don't know what you thought watching that cap, just seeing him kind of off the pace from the start. Yeah, not really featuring at all when he was not the overwhelming favourite, but defending champion, probably the biggest name in the field. And
I feel like he was the defending champion, but there was three of them last year that were really in with a shot, and he just happened to be the one that kicked the hardest. And so I never really thought of him as like a massive favourite for it. I thought, but yeah, it was, he just didn't have it, did he?
It was interesting though. He obviously didn't go with the pace in the lead group, but still ran a solo 2:06 basically, didn't he? Which is impressive in its own right, I would say, just to run completely on your own the whole way and still run that. So
yes, he just got caught in between kind of the leading group of the Kenyans and Ethiopians, and then obviously in between ahead of the Brits, so yeah, just completely on his own. But yeah, I mean, obviously we have seen him run 2:11 in the past at Wrexham, but obviously he was pacemaking and hadn't trained for it. So I am very excited to see if and when Jake Smith finally kind of gives a marathon a proper go, because I think from his Strava, his heart rate was low. How much you read into that, I don't know, but he'd certainly look comfortable running 2:11 pace. Yeah, surely he's going to give one a go at some point. And you never know, but you think there's like a 2:08-ish, maybe quicker in there with a proper training block and actually racing it rather than just kind of pacemaking on his own.
He looks special, doesn't he? He looks so easy all the time. And he did hint on his Instagram post about his pacing job that something like it might be sooner than you think, or it might be fairly soon about his next marathon event, whatever that means. So yeah, you never know.
Yeah. And just another thing to mention as well, actually, he won in 2:04:01. And he sort of jogged the last couple hundred meters celebrating. And if he'd run 2:03:59, he would have got a $25,000 prize bonus. So you'd think he would have known that. I don't know what they get for first place anyway, but I imagine $25,000 would have been worth having.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of celebrating down the mile, it must be pretty cool to do that. And I suppose he was missing out on a PB, or wasn't on his PB pace, so didn't care too much about the time. But I'd certainly run my last couple hundred as hard as I could if there was $25,000 on the line.
Gosh, I wonder if he knew. You think he would?
Yeah, you thought that would be in their head, because that's their income at the end of the day.
I don't know. They may be able to think a bit clearer, but I know what my head's like at the end of a marathon. I could not work that out, how long it was going to take me to get there. But I'm sure they do know a little more of what's going on.
Good. So, yeah, we had some really good British performers there. And as I keep saying, a few that we've spoken to. So if you haven't listened to Phil Sessman's interview with George from a few weeks back, just in the build up to London, that's a really good listen. I spoke to Doug Muzzin a few weeks before the marathon as well. He ran 2:20. Yeah, and in the past, he's spoken to Dan Nash, Josh Lunn, Andrew Davis, Johnny Miller. All of those are available to listen to. And we're hoping to speak to Matt Leach in the coming weeks as well. As you said, George, you just ran 2:15. So, yeah, some nice British performers there in the men's. Kat, I suppose, for the women's, there's only one real headline. And I suppose Johnny Miller didn't get picked for the Olympic squad and perhaps didn't have his best day on Sunday. But Charlotte Purdue certainly answered a few questions, I suppose.
Yeah, she's been out there proving her point, hasn't she, since not getting selected. It was absolutely fantastic run by her. It was so good to see. She looked so strong right up to the end, really. She just looked like there was no doubt she was going to finish that off. I think she was just outside of becoming second best marathon runner in the UK, but she by 14 seconds or something, but still just such a great run.
Yeah, absolutely. And so she ran 2:23:26, didn't she? Other British females, so we had Natasha Cockrum, just outside her PB. Rose Harvey, who we're also hoping to speak to next week, did PB 2:29:45, so she snuck under the 2:30. Naomi Mitchell, Becky Briggs, and Samantha,
big breakthrough to get under that 2:30.
So some good British contenders there, but I think Charlotte Purdue did was really the class above for the British women, wasn't she, George? What did you think of Charlotte Purdue's run then?
Oh, yeah, really impressive. She just certainly proved her point. We'll never know what sort of shape she would have been in for the Olympics, because that was quite a few months ago. She had been injured. So, yeah, I suppose we'll never know whether she would have done better with the Olympics than the people that went. And I suppose maybe kind of in hindsight, being an Olympian is special. She'll have another chance in 3 years, but she's taken 2 and a bit minutes off her PB. Maybe in hindsight it was the best thing for her that she didn't go to the Olympics, got a chance to run a quick time that might get her some more like appearance fees going into other marathons and kind of everything that comes with being 2:23 runner. So might have worked out for the best, and I'm sure she'll want to be there in Paris to make sure that she is an Olympian. But yeah, just really impressive, and just yeah, couldn't have proved her point sort of much better that she is the leading British marathon runner out there at the moment on the woman's side.
And again, for her, it was good that there was so much coverage of her run, because obviously not being with the lead pack, you do sometimes just not really know what's going on, but there was some really good coverage, which is nice.
Yeah, I should just say the winner of the female race was Jocelyn Jepkosgei of Kenya, and she ran 2:17:43, so a quick time there. Had the mini marathon as well. Before we talk about that, I should just give a big shout out to Carl Wellborn, who again we're also hoping to talk to next week about his London marathon. He ran a 2:21, which was a big, well, 2 minute PB for him as a V40, and he was the leading V40 outside of the elite. So huge congrats to Carl on that great run, and yeah, we'll hopefully get a chat with him about that run in the coming weeks, along with Rose and hopefully Matt as well. Anything else about the marathon, guys? I suppose you watched it. TV coverage was good and the mini marathon happened. Anything else you want to talk about there, George?
No, yeah, TV coverage was good as it. Yeah, I was expecting it to be.
Did you press the red button just for the elite only races, or was that not available live?
No, you could do that. I didn't. I stuck with the main feed, mainly because Steve Cram was on that and not on the other one. So that was my reasoning. And they did, I think, obviously, they normally do sort of the charity stuff and that kind of thing once the elite race are finished. So the elite races were sort of pretty much on exclusively anyway while they were on, which was good.
Sounds good. Cool. Okay. We've had Berlin Marathon as well, which happened, was it the week before? Did you guys sit down and watch Berlin? George, did you watch Berlin?
No, I didn't watch it. I think I was out running for most of the time it was on. So I was tracking John, who trained within Loughborough, tracking his run quite a bit, but no, I didn't really see much of the elite race other than the results.
Yeah, and apparently hot and humid towards the end sort of put pay to quite a few people's races. Again, Matt Clowes was running and he had a fairly rough time of it. Recap there.
Yeah, I was out marshalling Pitchcroft 10K that morning, and so I was just tracking Bekele to see, and so I was watching start, was seeing he had gone off at world record pace, and then slowly sort of watched it drift away the world record pace, which is a bit disappointing, but
yeah.
I'm sure he'll do better in his next one. He's still my hero.
Bekele came third in 2:06:47. The winner was 2:05:45. Gay Adola from Ethiopia. So he's still due for New York, as far as I know, Bekele, in November.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's not really a world record sort of course, is it, New York? So he's just going to be there for the win, but
yeah. All right.
Maybe next year.
And the major marathons keep on coming, because we have Chicago this Sunday, which will be the 10th of October. And then we also have Boston the following day on the Monday, 11th of October. So in terms of British interest, Stephen Scullion of Ireland is running Boston. In terms of Chicago, do we have anyone in the Chicago field as far as you know, George?
No, not that I've seen on the elite star list so far. Pretty sure Chicago was being sort of sold, certainly in America, as Galen Rupps. I'm pretty sure he said he's going there to win. Won it before, has he?
I believe so, yeah.
But yeah, he's a couple of minutes slower than the fastest runners in the field. So that'll be interesting to see how he gets on there. And yeah, really interested to see how Stephen Scullion in particular does in Boston. That'll be exciting to watch. Hopefully we can watch it.
Hopefully. I don't know about watching it. If we do see anything about streams, we'll try and get it on our Instagram, and because that will be A good one to watch, both of those, Chicago flat and fast and Boston hilly, but can also have some great races. Okay, great.
I should just say that I think Tish Jones, who's from the UK, she's in Boston, so her PB is 2:31, so I'm sure that'll be her run.
Perfect. All right, so that's that. Any other news you need to talk about today, guys? We've got George Ian Beattie appointed chair of UK Athletics, so we've got a new chair. How big a difference that will make to sort of the ground running of things, I don't know, but interesting.
Yeah, no, me neither. I mean, he was chair of Scottish Athletics, who are pretty good at the moment, so hopefully that was his doing and he'll be, yeah, good for UK Athletics. But yeah, I don't know much about him or, yeah, what he's really doing.
Yeah, okay. So road season is definitely upon us. Marathon season is upon us. Soon we'll be talking about marathons and cross country and everything else. George, hope the last few days of training goes well for Great South Run. Are you having much of a taper, or is it sort of going in quite heavy on the training?
Taper a little bit. I'll do a session Saturday, Tuesday, sort of as normal, and then the sort of the runs after that will be, like, the easy runs will be shorter than they normally would be, so Wednesday will be shorter. Probably do a little bit of something on Friday, just get the legs ticking over, maybe a couple of miles at target-ish pace, and then race on Sunday. So yeah, not a normal complete taper, as if it was sort of like a real target race. But yeah, we'll taper hopefully enough to freshen up a bit.
That's good. And fingers crossed for that win forecast. Kat, just continuing to build some mileage and get back to running again.
I've got a trip to Mallorca next week, so I'm going to go do some warm weather training. So John's doing a triathlon out there with some of his friends, so going out there for a week. So hopefully my injury is good enough that I can get a good few miles in and try to continue not to be an idiot.
Lots of hills.
It's going to be
there,
hard with a whole day to run. I'm going to probably just stick to the seafront.
Very good. Well, that sounds nice. Very jealous of that. Okay, cool. So this week's interview, George, it's about a month or so ago now, you sat down with track athlete, 1500 meter runner, Erin Wallace. Do you want to talk us about the interview that you had with her?
Yeah, so as I say, it was a few weeks ago now, I think. She just run her PB a few days before I spoke to her. So her new PB is 4:07.46, which is certainly, I would have thought that's good enough for Commonwealth Games standards, and it's getting there for, and stuff, yeah, not far off world standards now. So quite a big jump up this year. Really sort of made it as a senior, I suppose, really now. Getting a medal at British Championships, silver medal there in the 1500, got a bronze at Euro under 23s as well. Just another sort of Scottish middle distance runner coming through that's, yeah, really good. Trains with Laura Muir and Gemma Riki, coached by Andy Young. So spoke a bit about that, just the season she'd had, her training, and yeah, her plans for next year. I think next year is a really good opportunity for people like Erin, who haven't got a senior GB vest yet, but are like on the fringes and like youngsters coming through, improving quickly, because not only is there Worlds, Euros, and Commonwealth, there's also World Indoors, so that's an opportunity, because I don't think that many people will be doing that with three championships in the summer. So yeah, just speaking about her plans for 2022 and yeah, her season that she did in 2021.
Great, lovely. Well, we hope you enjoyed listening to that, and hopefully we've got some exciting interviews coming up over the next few weeks, a few marathon runners to listen to. And we will check back in a couple of weeks' time. So Kat, George, thanks very much as always. Enjoy your running. And thanks to you guys for listening. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, see you soon.
See you soon.
Thank you for joining me, Erin. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I've not really been up to much today, but yeah, I'm good.
Been out training today or just a rest day for you?
Actually, today I'm just kind of like cross-training, so I tried to go to the swimming pool earlier, but it was shut, so I did try and start my day like quite productive, but it's not really worked out, so I'm just going to go later instead.
Yeah. So, I mean, you used to do triathlon like full time, didn't you? So, do you still do a lot of swimming and cycling as part of your training?
I do like absolutely zero cycling, but I still swim like once or twice a week, just to kind of like, I'm still not up to like full mileage, or I'm still not at a point where I can just run. So, I'm still kind of like substituting it in with swimming a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. So we'll get into like some of your medal performances this year and like some of your successes earlier on as a triathlete as well. But first, congratulations on the PB a few days ago, 407.46, I think. Talk us through that race.
It was really random. It was just like an open graded that's about 40 minutes down the road from me. And it's just because it was kind of getting to the end of the season and I had a bit of a break or I had a wee bit of time off after European under 23. So I had a few weeks like building back up to fitness again. And then it got to like kind of the end of August and I was like I feel fit again, but there's hardly any races. So I didn't really know what to do. So I was like, I was just entering them like left, right and centre. And I thought I might as well just do it anyway. But it was like, there wasn't a pace or anything. And it was just kind of me. And I think it was just like seven other boys or something. And like it was like the winner was 3:55 and the last person was like 4:15. So like we're all very spread out. But yeah, it's good. Like I just felt quite strong. And yeah, I was just surprised. I was kind of aiming for like, I was thinking to myself, if I run under 4:10, like that'll be a really good shift. So yeah, I was really surprised with PB, but
yeah. I think sometimes those performances come when you're least expecting them, don't they?
Yeah, definitely.
And so now it's, 6th of September now, I think. What's your current training and racing? Have you just got a couple of one or two more races between now and the end of the season?
I've just got one more race in Berlin, which is on Sunday, and that's 1500. And then I'm finished for the year.
Yeah. And any aims going into that race? Is it, where does that 407 sit in terms of standards for next year's championships and stuff like that?
I should probably know that, but I don't. I think, the Olympic standard was like 404. So I feel like the world standard will probably be about that. But there's Komi standards, which is like 407.1, I think. And then, so it'd be nice to get like under that. That'd be really good. But there's like a qualification period next year as well. So I'm not like stressing over it. It's not like it's like my last chance to get it, but it'd be nice to get that time as well.
Yeah, definitely. And then after that race, are you someone that has like complete week or two off, or do you kind of find yourself just itching to run? How do you handle off season?
I'm going to Greece on Tuesday for 4 days, so that'll be quite nice. But I don't think I'll be running very much there. Yeah. I'm not sure what Andy's got like planned for me yet, but I don't think I'll be running. But I don't want to say that and then I end up training. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And then kind of going into the winter season now, I think you've had success indoors in recent years. Will that be your main focus or do you use like cross country as that like strength training as well?
I'd like to do a few cross countries, but the distance has gone up quite a lot. So that's not really for me, I don't think. Like I think Liverpool's like 8K. So I don't think I'll be doing that. I'm not really sure. But there's a few that are 4K, so I'll probably do them. But mostly focusing on indoors, definitely.
Yeah. And do you like approach indoor season differently to outdoors, just like using it as training, I suppose, for the outdoor season, or is it a real like focus of yours?
I think in our group, indoors probably is quite a focus. Or Laura has won, she won Europeans, 15 and 3K, it's either 2 or 3 times. So, and I think there's a world indoors this year, but because of all the champs outdoors, I think a lot of people won't do it. So that could be quite a good opportunity for someone like me who's just like coming through to like maybe aim for something like that. But I think we just kind of race like all year round, or like I don't really change my mindset too much, I don't think. It's just there's less races indoors, I guess,
yeah,
than outdoors.
And yeah, I think you just said it there, that next year is going to be a really good opportunity for athletes that are coming through and kind of making it as a senior like you have, because there's three outdoor championships and there's no way sort of everyone's going to be doing all three of them. So that must be really exciting, knowing that there's, yeah, loads of spaces available. I mean, you may well have made the team if it was just one championships the way you've been progressing, but yeah, that must be exciting knowing that there's lots of opportunities next year.
Yeah, definitely, and especially with commies, like I'd really like to make that team especially. But I think there's only, they're not taking, the team's not that big, I don't think. So it's like, even if you run the standards, you might not necessarily get picked. And then obviously Scottish middle distance is like very strong. So it's actually going to be quite, obviously both of them are difficult, but yeah, it'll be hard to get in for both of them, I think.
Yeah. And I think you just mentioned it there. You are coached by Andy Young, which means you're training with Laura Muir and Gemma Reekie. Do you train with them like full time? Do you go abroad to train if they do? How does that work?
We got away last year and to South Africa in December, and then we were in Dubai in January, like with them. But most of the summer I've kind of been training by myself because they got to go to America, but I kind of still had uni and stuff, so I wasn't there. And then they were racing there for ages, and then obviously Tokyo. So I've actually not seen them very much, but I've still just been like doing anti sessions and stuff. But I think we'll be back together soon, I'm not sure, like in a few weeks anyway, so that'll be quite good.
And that must be such a benefit, not just like training with them and like pushing them on the track or chasing them around the track, but also just but just to like learn from them as well and like see how they behave off the track, and just to have those sort of athletes to see every day or regularly must be really good.
I think it's just, they're just so normal to me now, like I don't really like I know they're superstars, but at the same time like they're just normal people, so it's like when they're on the TV it's just a bit strange because it's like they're just normal to me. Or a lot of people over in Glasgow especially like know of Laura, so yeah, it's weird because like obviously she is such a superstar, but she's also like a very normal person as well, so it's quite nice in that way as well.
Yeah, I suppose knowing them as a normal person must make it easier to see yourself being them rather than like looking
superhuman,
and I could never reach that.
Yeah, or like even the Olympics, like watching to the 1500, it's like it's Laura, Revy and Katie, and I was like I've trained with Laura and like I've raced Katie and Revy like quite a lot this year. Like this is weird because it's like people that like I know of, but like they're at the Olympics. It's just a bit strange.
Yeah. Did you find that hard to watch, knowing that, because sort of particularly Walcott Nolan and Snowden, you were right there with them at British Championships? Or do you get more inspired by that, knowing that you're kind of on that trajectory?
And I was never really aiming for the Olympics, or it wasn't really on the cards for me until probably like it was after I ran 408 at Watford that I started getting into more, because you know how there's like a point system.
Yeah.
So I started getting into more international ones. So it was only after, well, I was racing in Poland like the next weekend, and then it was kind of mentioned something about like if you run well here and at the next race and at British Champs, there's like an off chance you might get in. So it's not like, but then I had a bit of a problem with the second race that like I flew to, it was meant to be in Sweden, and I flew there and I got like turned away at the border. So like I couldn't do the race. But it's not like I had a big Olympic dream that got crushed, if that makes sense. Like I thought it was quite inspiring watching it.
Yeah.
And I wasn't like, it was good to watch.
Yeah, definitely. And the three of you, along with obviously Josh Kerr, Jake Whiteman and like so many others, Scottish middle distance running is like very, very strong at the moment. Why do you think that is? Is it just like success breeding success, or is there something that like Scottish athletics are doing right?
I don't know. Must be the tap water, I don't know. It's just like I think especially Laura's quite a legacy for girls anyway, or like that's like I'd heard of Andy's group because of Laura. Like because of obviously like everyone in athletics knows who she is. And then Gemma started getting really good as well. I think I kind of joined when Gemma was getting really good. It was kind of like 2019 or 2020, I can't remember. No, 2018, I can't remember. But it's definitely like a legacy thing, I think. And once you get like kind of a lot of people getting good and getting faster, then it just like, or right now it seems like it's kind of continuing that way. So it's really cool to watch. And it's definitely to do with, what's the word, role models, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And like, you've made a big step up this year. I think you've gone from 412 and to 407. You've won silver at British Championships. What do you put that improvement down to?
I think it's getting used to Andy's training. I'm not sure, because I only started doing running properly like end of 2019, but then I was getting injured. So I've only really, probably since March 2020, I've like just been doing running training, just been doing that. So I think it's finally starting to like click into place. So hopefully there's more to come as well if it just like keep it consistent for the next few months.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what was it that made you make the permanent switch to running? Last year, I think you said.
I did really enjoy triathlon, and there's still parts of it that I miss quite a lot. But I just didn't really like cycling that much, to be honest. Like, I really like swimming. Wasn't a huge fan of cycling, and I was like, no, you don't have to make a choice. But at the same time, I was like, I think I could be better at one rather than like okay at two. Or it was getting more difficult because everyone was specialising a bit more for both of them. And I kind of wanted to do a bit more like speed work and kind of 800s and stuff like that on the track. I don't know, it just kind of like felt like the right thing to do more than anything. But that's not saying that other people can't do both. Like, I think you definitely can. But for me, I just want to do one. And it's a lot less draining as well. So,
yeah.
It's your choice.
And I mean, I think it's because you were having success as a junior at the 8 and 15 while doing the triathlon. I mean, that must be quite unusual, because I'd say we didn't not normally be more the 5K, 10K runners like Beth Potter and Alex Yee that are like switching to and from the triathlon.
Yeah, it's really strange. Like, I was training like 25 hours a week at one point. So I was kind of thinking like the endurance would just kind of transfer over to running. But it was just really weird that, see, right now, if I tried to do a 5K, I just don't think I'd be that good at it. But, or even like when I was doing triathlon, I think I just wasn't really training for, I don't know. It's really weird. It just feels like it's not transferred over, but hopefully it will kick in at some point. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So going back to, well, one of your major successes sort of as a junior was the Youth Commonwealth Games in 2017 in the Bahamas, I think it was.
Yeah, Bahamas.
That must have been, well, a really cool experience, but obviously you then won gold in the 15 and made the final in the 800 as well. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that was cool. That was one of the coolest things I've ever done. I just like, especially with the race, like I'd never raced anyone there before, so I just didn't really know what to expect. So then when I won, I was just like, I don't know what's just happened, but oh, it was so cool. The team was so cool. Bahamas was just like unreal. So yeah, no, I had a really good time there. It was really fun.
Yeah, no, I can imagine, particularly the Bahamas is a pretty cool place to go. And yeah, that must have been, did you not think at that point about thinking of only running, or did you just not really think about it that much and just really enjoy the experience?
I just didn't really think about it that much. I think I was just so like not caught off guard, but I just really didn't expect to win at all. So yeah, I think I just wasn't really thinking about it.
Was that the highlight of your like earlier successes? I think did you win the mini marathon, under 20, like domestic titles, European under 18 bronze, I think, world under 20s. I mean, it was that Commonwealth Games the highlight of all of those?
Yeah, definitely. I think just because where it was, like, because there was like eight of us, I think. It was like, there was more, I can't remember, but Team Scotland as well. It was just like, it was cool. Like, our hotel was like all connected to the beach. It was just a cool place.
Yeah, no, that does sound, yeah, amazing place to go and race, particularly sort of as a junior, to keep you, like, to make you want to kind of carry on doing that and inspire you for, like, more
global competitions, that must have been really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And as a junior, it's so much more like relaxed as well, I think. Or at the time, like, I was just happy to be there more than anything. So I was just like, yeah, a lot more like chill vibes.
And then coming back to like 2021 and the successes you've had this year. So as I said, you've won silver at the British Championships. That was a really tight race. I think you were leading going into the final straight or for part of the final straight, and then Walcott Nolan like came past you, but I mean, still a brilliant silver medal. How do you look back on that race, like a few months on?
I think there was a few of us that were quite close. So there was four of us that were really close on time. So I was like, I could have a good race and win, and I could have a good race and come fourth. So it wasn't really, or like I'd be happy like in that range. But yeah, like I've watched the video back, and Bevy just like, she's just so strong. Like she's, like you think she, because she's fell behind, she's not going to come back. And then she just looks so strong the last like 50 metres. But it's not like, I don't think I could have done any more, because I was trying to hold off Katie on my inside. So like I was giving it, I was going all out anyway. So yeah, I'm kind of glad that Katie was pushing me the whole way, so I know that I didn't just like slow down, if that makes sense. But yeah, when I went into the lead, I was just like, I don't really know what's going on here. But it was a good race, and I was really happy with it.
And because I think, well, you ran 4:08 for like the third or fourth time at that point, and doing that in a championship race, having run heats, it wasn't even pace, was it? Because I think did Walcott Nolan make it hard and then drop off, so it wasn't like a perfect BMC pacemaker race. So running that 4:08 again must have been really pleasing.
Yeah, it was weird. Like I think I've run 4:08 three times, and it's like every single time I've done it, I felt like different afterwards, if that makes sense. So like after British Champs, I didn't feel that tired, but when I'd done it like the week before in Poland, I felt absolutely gubbed. Like I felt horrendous. So it's just weird how sometimes a championship race, you take your mind off the pace and you're just kind of racing everyone. So it almost like doesn't feel, it's not like I looked at the bell and was like, oh no, like I've got to run this time to run this time. It was just like, I'm just trying to like beat people I'm against.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that makes it running faster, a bit easier sometimes.
Yeah. Do you prefer those sort of races, the ones where you're not just like focusing on the clock and in a pacemaking train, or do you like to just try and run like fast from start to finish?
I'm quite one for splits. Like I'm quite like, I pay attention to it quite a lot, like when I'm racing, especially if I'm going for like a time or something. I don't know, I think when it's a pace race, it's like you know what's going to happen, whereas a championship race, it's kind of all up in the air, so you don't really, the uncertainty puts more pressure on it, I think. Yeah. Whereas a BMC, it's like I know what pace it's going to go in, so it's not as stressful.
Yeah, and I agree. I like knowing that you don't have to worry about going to the front or like how the race will pan out. It's just gonna could be paced at this, and that's it.
Yeah, definitely.
And making like the transition from being like a junior talent to then like delivering as a senior is always quite difficult. So how satisfying was it to like complete that transition, winning a British Championships medal, beating the likes of Snowden and Archer? That must have been like a really pleasing like moment for you.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like I think because when I was younger, I just found running so much, not easier than I do now, but it definitely came naturally to me when I was younger, which I guess it still does in a way. But I think I was always quite, or when I was in Bahamas, I was quite tall, I think, like for my age. So I thought that probably made it a bit easier as well. But yeah, no, I'm really glad to have like started to transition into the senior ranks, because last year I was kind of like, I think I was fourth at British Champs, so like I was kind of, but that was kind of without all the, like I don't think like Laura and Gemma and stuff did it, so it's not like everyone was there. But yeah, it was good to just like gradually get closer, and then now I've kind of like broken into it. It's definitely like a big confidence booster.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you mentioned in an interview after the race that you sort of felt you were following in like the same trajectory as Gemma's, so that must be kind of given you a lot of confidence as well, seeing what she's gone on to do since then.
Yeah, definitely. I think when you're doing the same training and you see what they're doing as well, it definitely gives you a lot of confidence. I think she's a bit ahead of me, like, not that I'm, like, comparing, but, like, time-wise, like, for what age we are. But it's nice to kind of be following the same improvement, even if we're at, like, different stages at it.
Yeah, and I suppose you, in a way, are, like, younger as a runner, having only just focused on running as well. So there's, yeah, hope that more room for improvement, like, moving forward as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, that's what I keep telling myself. I hope so.
But yeah, like 5 second improvement this year, I think, and sort of going along that trajectory. So yeah, definitely making, like, going, certainly going in the right direction, which must be exciting.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully it can just keep going like that, and then in 2 years I'll be really fast.
And then you went on to win bronze at European under 23s in July in Tallinn. So just first, like, going abroad again after sort of the 18 months before that, getting the opportunity to race for GB again on the international stage must have been really exciting.
Yeah, it was really exciting because at one point, I don't know if you've seen that, it got cancelled.
Yeah.
For like 3 days, and then obviously Estonia stepped in to take it. So obviously it was cancelled quite far out, so like I was not gutted, but I was like, oh, that's quite annoying that that's happened. But I'm was thinking, oh, there'll be other races anyway. But then it was quite a quick turnaround that got put back on again. So yeah, that was really good.
Yeah, and then it was another really tight race. You like managed to just dip for the bronze medal, I think, or like dive through the line a little bit. That last 100 looked pretty tough, and you did well to hang on for that medal. So yeah, talk us through that race.
It was just, I think it went out at quite a like decent pace. Like it wasn't all like cagey and boxy, which is a bit nicer. And then, like, I just trying to stick to the insides of the track, so I'd run like the shortest line round. So I was just doing that, and then it started to pick up with like 400 to go, I think. And then, yeah, it just kind of like splintered. And yeah, the last 100, like, I felt like quite strong. I was like, oh, yeah, I can catch him here. And then with about 10 meters to go, my legs just like gave way on me. So like, I was like stumbling towards the line, but I'm glad I made it. Yeah. And yeah, it was worth like the dive, I think. I've still got a lump in my elbow actually from when I fell. Like, I don't know what it is or like what's going on, but yeah, it's just kind of like the left side of me was a bit bruised, but I think it was worth it.
Yeah, definitely. And so I think you'd won as a medal as you're under 18 at European. So again, like proving that you're like on the same track, like throughout must be really good.
Yeah, I put a lot of pressure on myself to try and get a medal like at those champs. So I was really happy when even though it was really close and I was almost fourth, it's like, I still got a medal, so it's fine. But yeah, I put a lot of pressure on myself going into that. So it was quite like a relief afterwards. I think especially because Gemma had gone two years before or something and won like 2 golds. I was like, I'm going to need to come back with something here because it's not really continuing the trend. So,
yeah. And is that your last junior championships, or are there more that you're eligible for in the next couple of years?
I think it's my last one because I'm like a middle year under 20, so I just get the one champs. So yeah. I don't think there's any more. I don't know if there's world under 20s. I don't think that's a thing. No, I'm not sure.
Actually, no. No. Well, yeah, lots going on next year to aim for. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of days after that, in that race in Tallinn and the flight and everything that came with it, you then got into your first Diamond League, I think, in Gateshead. So yeah, talk us through how that came about. Was it last minute, or did you always know it was kind of on the cards?
I always knew it was on the cards, but I also like always knew it was going to be quite difficult to like turn around and race again, because our flight was at like 5 a.m. on the Monday morning, so like I had to leave the hotel at like 2:30 or something, so it wasn't really the most ideal prep for it. And then see coming off such a like, because I think because I put so much pressure on myself, like you're so much like relief, I don't know, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like kind of like it's hard to come off that and then race 2 days later. But it was, yeah, I'm glad I did it. It was a cool experience and it was good to race like at that level again.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I imagine that's just made you want to compete in Diamond Leagues more and get yourself into more of those, yeah, more of those kind of events, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. Like they're really cool events to do. They're so well organised. Like we were staying in the Hilton beforehand as well, so like, let's do some more of this.
Yeah. And then just going back to kind of a bit more of your training, without obviously giving too many secrets away of what your group does. I mean, what does your kind of typical week look like particularly during the summer into when you're racing? Is it pretty low mileage and like just speed sessions? How do you prepare for track races?
I'm kind of quite low mileage like the whole year, so I don't really do that many miles anyway. So I don't really back off much of that in the summer. Like I think I'm still just trying to build up to like a certain number of miles anyway. So I don't really back off like, but our training is quite different for all of us. So it's like, it's not really the same for everyone. Like I feel like we probably do a bit more kind of like shorter hill reps or like speed sessions kind of like from like January onwards, but it's not like it's a clear switch, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah. So there's no sort of big difference between winter training and like the summer training. It's all kind of pretty much consistent throughout.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And you said a bit earlier on you'd been out to, I think, South Africa and Dubai with Laura and Gemma. Was it just three of you or were there other athletes there as well?
There was five of us. So I don't know if you know Eloise, Walker and Saul Sweeney. They were there as well. So we were just like a group of five in South Africa and in Dubai with Andy. And there's a lot of people out in Dubai actually when we were there, like Jake Whiteman, Andy Butcher, and like Brighton Phoenix as well. They were all there. So it was quite a good, like, and Keely and was out there as well, actually. So yeah, it was quite a good group of people.
Yeah, it must be, yeah, again, just really good to spend time with people like that and, yeah, just gain confidence from training with people like that. And then, yeah, there's quite a few World Olympic medalists in that group now. So, yeah, really good group of people to train with, I suppose. Was that your first, like, major trips abroad for training?
We managed to go to Font last year in July, I think. But that was kind of, like, amidst, like, COVID restrictions. So it was a bit stressful with that. But yeah, no, that's my first like altitude camp and I think I've really benefited from it. So would definitely like to go back soon.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you find like adapting to altitude? Did it take you a couple of weeks to get used to it? How long were you out there for as well, actually?
Just 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Have you been to altitude before?
I haven't, no. I've wanted to. Loughborough, they normally do an April trip at Easter. The 2 years I've been at university have been cancelled, so hopefully soon.
Oh, that's really bad. Is that De Font as well?
It's Boulder normally.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. Oh, I'd love to go there or like go to America because they were in Flagstaff, I think. That's Boulder, isn't it?
Flagstaff, Arizona, I think. Boulder's Colorado.
Oh, right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, because they were out in Flagstaff again. I think that's quite high though. I'm not sure. But yeah, it was just like hard the whole time you're there, but then when you come back, I think I was tired for maybe like a week, and then it was after that I was like, I feel like really good right now. Or like when we were in South Africa in December, like I was running really well in like January. I didn't really show through indoors, but I was training really well, and I think it was off the back of South Africa, so I'm like quite keen to get there before indoors again and hopefully like race a bit better this time.
Yeah, well, I definitely something I would like to do, but yeah, getting to altitude, just it did. I think some people find it doesn't work as well as others, but I think yeah, if it works for you, it's definitely yeah, really beneficial for your training.
Yeah, definitely, and yeah, there are altitudes like a lot of the year, and they're running really fast, so yeah. Must do something.
Yeah, definitely. Looking ahead a little bit more to next year, so. Just going that you cover your PBs is 202 for the 800 and say 407 for the 1500. Do you have any particular aims for them besides like potentially some standards for the championships, or yeah, are you just sort of just going to carry on racing and see what times come?
Probably just carry on racing and see what times come, because yeah, just not really sure like how much of an improvement and stuff I'm going to make, so just like take it as it comes and then see how training goes and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I can't remember what order the Worlds, Europeans and Commonwealths are in next year, but are they just the main aim from now on, and then everything before that, including indoors, is sort of aiming towards those sort of events?
I think there's World Indoors next year. I think that could be quite a good chance for me if less people are doing it. I do prefer outdoor racing to indoor racing, but I was quite liked indoors when I was younger, so hopefully get a bit more into that this year, and then it'd be really good to make that team. Like, if I don't know where it is, I think it's in Serbia actually, it's in Belgrade. So yeah, no, I've definitely got like an eye out for it, but I'm not like tunnel vision onto it, if that makes sense. But like, it'd be nice to make a team like that.
Yeah, it seems like your main aim is just to have fun, I suppose, and just race. Is that true? Is that kind of how you approach things like that?
Yeah, just like train, make it through the winter without getting injured, and then I think I'll be fine in the summer. But as long as I can make it through the next few months, and I think I'll be racing well next year, hopefully.
Yeah, and so you're someone that typically injury prone, or are you? Yeah,
I think it's because I've never really had a high mileage for running. So when I first started doing running, I just ran too much. So
yeah,
I ended up with like a stress fracture, like stuff like that. But yeah, I'd say I'm quite injured compared to a lot of people. Like, I got a wee niggle in Estonia and stuff like that as well. But it seems like I can cope off a low mileage, so it's not really that big a deal. It'll just be like hopefully building past that, like really slowly. Or gradually built up miles.
Yeah, got through obviously a pretty busy season, like without any injuries, or you've raced a lot this year, so that must give you confidence that you can kind of get through seasons like that and kick on again next year.
Yeah, I think I just need to, as long as I'm training consistently, like staying injury free, then I'll be fine. Yeah. But yeah, I do keep Andy does keep a really close eye on like wee pains and niggles and stuff like that. So yeah, they are like noted, and like something's always done about them. So I think it should be fine.
Yeah, and I think, I imagine now being in that group that you're in, and I think you're now sponsored by New Balance, is that right? Does that kind of help with access to physio, like strength and conditioning, all that kind of thing?
I'm on like the Scottish Institute, so I've kind of had access to all of that before, but it's so good that because they sponsored me after, I think it's after British Champs, that it was kind of like made a bit more, or the first time I raced in it was in Gateshead. So, it's really good to have them, like, because I didn't really realise until this year how difficult it was to actually get a contract, or just after speaking to people I've been racing with. And they're like saying they can't get sponsors and stuff like that. It was only, I think, because the people I've been around, like Laura and Gemma, they seem to have, like, they've ran so well, so they've obviously got contracts. So to me, it's just like, I thought it was easier than it is, if that makes sense, which was really silly of me. But yeah, I'm really grateful to have them sponsoring me now as well.
Yeah, it must just be really good to know that there's kind of a company that kind of has confidence in you and backs you to thank you so much for your time. This has been great. We'll just finish off with a few sort of quick fire questions, if that's okay with you. Don't need to give them too much thought. If you could go for a run with any sports person, I suppose you you run with people with quite big names quite a lot, but maybe aside from those two, who would it be, and like where would you run?
I think Carson Warholm's really cool. I mean, I don't know how long he would be running for, probably not that long, but I can see him being a bit of a beast over like the 800 as well, to be fair. Probably does have good endurance in him, but I've always wanted to go St. Moritz. Yeah. I think it looks so gorgeous there. I would love to go there. So with Carson Wilhelm around a lake in St. Moritz somewhere.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. If you could go back and witness like any sporting event live, what would it be?
I think Super Saturday, like London 2012. Because I can still remember watching like Jess Ennis at home. And I think that's just like something that's just like stuck with me. So yeah. I would have loved to have been there live. It would have been cool.
I suppose you're part of like the 2012 sort of generation, I suppose, that was inspired by the Olympics and kind of part of that.
Yeah, definitely. I think like most people you ask, like kind of like our age, like they'll remember that quite vividly. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. I certainly do. So if you could be, well, we normally ask this to we ask this to everyone, but if you could be a professional athlete in any sport, and I suppose you've already done triathlon, or not, you've done triathlon a bit, but other than running in triathlon, what would that be?
Say speed climbing. I was watching the Olympics. I thought it was so cool, and like they're also strong as well. It's like I want to look like that and be able to climb all that fast.
It was very impressive. I just sat there. How on earth they did that. And if you could only run in one like race a year, every year, what event would that be?
I want to say, I think Eugene looks cool. Is there always a Eugene Diamond League? Probably.
Yeah.
Or Zurich Diamond League, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Switzerland, not that I've ever done it, but Switzerland's cool. So I'd like to go there.
Yeah, good choice. So thank you again for your time. Good luck at Berlin this week. Is that a international race? What kind of race is that?
It's like a continental silver tour, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, good opportunity to run fast, hopefully. So, good luck with that.
Thank you.
You try.
And thanks for talking to me as well.
That's okay. No, thank you for coming on. And, all the best with that race and then going into the winter and next year.
Thank you. And you too.
Cheers. Thank you.